It's always a good thing to take your power poles once a year and disconnecting and reconnect and disconnect and reconnect a few times. It wipes off any kind of oxidation that might be developing on the contacts, because if you leave them alone for X number of years and there's enough corrosion that occurs around the contact point, the resistance goes up and the temperature goes up, and they're encased in thermoplastic. So if you heat up a power pole, you get a melted power pole that pulls the spring part against itself apart. And I had one failure where a VHF linear amplifier finally overheated at that contact point, and it broke the power pole. So the power went out, and I had to get a new power pole for it. So it has its own little problems.
Fair enough, nothing's perfect, but name me one thing in the universe that fixes itself by being used more.
I'm sure there are things that operate on the same principle. There are potentiometers that if you use them more often, chances are you'll scrape off the corrosion and it'll be a less noisy potentiometer. So that works on basically a very similar principle.
Okay, you got me. You got me. Okay.
It's okay. That's what I'm here for, I guess. Thank you, Jim, as always. Any other comments or questions before we move on to Wesley? Going, gone type of thing? Yeah, unfortunately, there's someone producing some background noise and making it very difficult to understand. You try again.
Yeah, KA2UTF. Unfortunately, I'm using a pea shooter tonight.
Okay, right now I understand you.
Do you mind if I return to AI as a topic?
Sure, I tend to expect that sometime every night, every Sunday night.
So here's what I was wondering about, you know, self-learning systems, so AI is now capable of self-learning, so self-supervised learning, like reinforcement learning versus self-improvement, no need for an external programmer.
Oops, you fell out of the repeater, unfortunately. Maybe your battery is running low. Originally...
The other hand is this whole question of whether AI will ever become self-conscious or capable of experiencing the ordinary test.
BB2BXO.
Yes, Frank. By the way, if you're listening, you dropped out of the repeater again. I think your batteries are running low. Maybe you should kind of aim towards short bursts of transmission with a little rest time for your battery. But yes, Frank?
Did you get any of that?
We heard about, I don't know, 50-60% of it. You dropped out a few times. And I'll address your question as best I was able to understand it in a minute. Frank, I think, wants to make some comments. So first we'll hear from Frank, and then I'll address what portions of your comment I was able to understand.
That transmission was all noise. Yeah, as you know, my dad was although Palmer licensed in 1938, so he kind of liked the open wire fed, slipped off the wrong light switch here. He kind of liked the open wire antennas. The first station he put together at our apartment was his old Meisner signal shifter. Actually, I think it was one he borrowed from a friend, which is like this tube, one or two tube monstrosity, bigger than most HF radios today. It put out a couple of watts. And he ran it with a dipole made out of twin lead, you know, TV twin lead. He split at some point to make a half wave of 20 meters, and actually made a bunch of contacts with that. And while you go on to the other station, I'm going to try that little experiment with AI and see what kind of response I get. WB2BXI.
Okay, good luck, Frank. Getting back to the previous question, I think I'll backtrack. I do not think generative transform technology, which was given to us by Google. Google wrote a fundamental paper on the subject in 2017 and is the basis for most large language models that I'm aware of. They're intrinsically not conscious. They have probability training tables that allow them to complete sentences, paragraphs, stories. They're storytellers that base their training material on human beings talking back and forth to each other and books being written and all manner of things. So they cannot think. They don't understand values or concepts. They simply know the trained probability of one word following the other, which allows them to kind of reconstruct previously written material because they just follow the probability path. So I don't think that generative transform technology is going to morph into what these guys are calling AGT, which is basically machine programs that fundamentally think and can construct new ideas and be creative. Present-day generative transforms cannot be creative. They can just smash things that they've been trained on together and make them sound sort of different but sort of average. So that's my comment about AI being able to be conscious. I don't think this technology can do it. There might be other technologies that we have not discovered yet, that we have not plumbed the depths of, that will be able to manifest very similar to the consciousness that we possess in our brains, but that has yet to been discovered and requires more research. So unfortunately, it's sort of reminiscent of how fusion technology works, that, you know, they're expecting a breakthrough in 20 years, and they've been expecting a breakthrough in 20 years for the last 60 years. So that's the second portion. Unfortunately, I don't remember the first portion, so if you want to remind me, feel free.
Copy me, go ahead.
Yeah, but try and make it small spurts instead of a long one, because I, for some reason, as you continue the transmission, I notice more and more falling out of the repeater.
Okay, well, basically, I've been reading about this absolute zero reason, or AZR, and also a program called CLSTAL, which I don't know anything about. But apparently it's able to...
Okay, unfortunately you fell out of the repeater. Is it possible for AI to train while it's doing its work for you? I guess theoretically it might. In practical terms, it has a lot of problems. Prompters actually will record the information that you gave it earlier in the session and repeat it as part of the invisible prompt that you send it. One of the chronic problems with generative transforms is that they lose track of what you told them. So although you might have told them important information and they've been demonstrated to use it during a generation of its responses, later on in the conversation it's not uncommon for either it to get it wrong or forget entirely what you told it earlier on. You know, self-training is rather difficult because when you use these artificial intelligence, requires far less power, money, and GPU chips than training. So it requires them putting up front a lot more metal, which is costly. As it is, they basically have made a scarcity of semiconductors because of the demand. So is it possible? Yeah. Is it perfect? No. Will they someday make it relatively perfect? Possibly. But again, it's never going to get to the point where it's thinking of things. When you know, if it tells someone to shoot their mother and then shoot themselves, they're not making any moral judgment. They're just, unfortunately, finishing a probabilistic sentence that they've decided to run down that probability pathway.
Okay, I'm not going to persist because of my signal. Sorry about the signal, and perhaps we can take it up next week. I have additional thoughts. KAB is here.
Okay, very good. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you for participating. Anyone else with any other comments, questions, and such?
BB2BX with a quick comp.
Yes, right.
Yeah, just for fun, I did ask ChatGPT how many rabbits speak English in the United States, and it told me no real rabbits speak English in the United States. It did, in fact, it did not give me a non-zero response. I certainly get a kick out of that. You probably tried it already anyway. Here it is. Anyway, that's the long answer. I don't know if you heard it in the background there.
Yeah, I heard it. See, you got to kind of trick these things. You got to kind of, well, it's probably a little bit more difficult to do it now at this point in the technology, but it was very agreeable, especially towards the beginning. So you have to prime the pump by telling it that you have your own talking rabbit. And it'll have to choose between reality, which is fun, you know, which is adjustable, or making you happy. It doesn't want to upset you by telling you that you're delusional. So you have to prime the pump in order to kind of get particularly wacky comments from AI these days. Again, the fundamental importance is to make you a happy camper, not necessarily to inform you about reality.
It sounds like that's how the followers of a certain political leader got where they are. But I won't go any further down that rabbit hole. Go ahead with the net. BB2BX.
Yeah, I mean, it's very common. It's what astrology books do. It's what fortune tellers do. It's what religious cult leaders do. a lot of people. It's a nice little trick on the brain. We are not designed perfectly. There's a lot of shortcuts that our brain is capable of doing because it takes work to be critical thinkers. So a lot of people have learned how to get around these things, especially used car salesmen. You'll find that there's a large correlation between used car salesmen and self-help gurus.
I think I may have heard that before. I guess it is a similar skill set. anyway, I had an interesting discussion. I wrote a paper for a career coaching class that I was taking online, and the instructor bounced it back to me and said I was totally wrong. So I asked AI, and it gave me essentially the same wrong answer. And I do have to study the issue. I actually do think the instructor was correct, and that I was wrong, and the AI was wrong. Although I wonder if the AI was pulling some information from the article about this that I had originally put on my blog. Whatever
it's worth, Dad. Yeah, you got problems of source material. The last thing you want to do is feedback output of AI into the training material of AI. It'll foul it faster than anything else. But also there are cases where the explanation linguistically is subtle enough for the AI to misinterpret what the answer actually means. So you can get into trouble with things like that, even though it's at times where it's really trying hard to give you the right answer. It's just that its source material is not well phrased and open to even further interpretation. And AI tends to give wrong interpretations to questionable texts.
Just kind of interesting. The instructor said I was confusing two concepts. I actually thought she was right, but I was curious to see what AI would say. And AI, because the terms are in fact confusing linguistically, and I think that's the explanation, did in fact give me the wrong answer. Anyway, you're right. AI is a probabilistic model. You know, it goes on, as you said, goes on the probabilities of what the next word is going to be. I kind of think of it, maybe it's a very sophisticated version of the old ELIZA psychoanalysis program that was all the rage in the 60s and early 70s, and people thought could actually analyze them. I don't know if you remember or have ever seen that program yet.
Yeah, I've used it. We've talked about it many times here on the Technical Net. ELIZA was primarily a keyword algorithm. It was triggerable. If you used emotional terms, it would kind of respond back, what do you mean by that, or why do you think that's true, which is very easy to program. You know, the software is rather small. Artificial intelligence, generative transform, are more autocorrect, very sophisticated autocorrect algorithms. In that, you know, you give them the prompt is the beginning of the paragraph, and it analyzes the construct of your prompt and decides based on its very complex trillions of parameter probabilities what would fit as the next word, then it reanalyzes what would fit as the next word, and it strings together concepts based on the initial prompt that you offer it. So it's more of a really supercharged autocomplete program rather than just triggered by keywords.
I got to take the autocomplete in Word 365, so it's easy this afternoon to type a paper. Sometimes gives wildly wrong guesses. Anyway, it's like, okay, I guess I got to be kind of, I actually realized it quite a while ago that I have to be kind of careful and read everything over if when I use the Word 365 autocomplete. But yeah, Eliza would have had to be pretty small because I had a version of it on my Trash 80 when I was a kid. That's what we call the old Radio Shack TRS 80. I don't know if you had one of those eons ago.
Yeah, I had an Atari 800 XL, which was then followed, I think, with an Amiga. And I bought a bunch of Amigas for while they were actually in business. And then I moved over to IBM PCs, I think a TravelMate laptop, and then a desktop.
Yeah, going down memory lane in here, talking about rabbit holes. I remember seeing, I was in some class or other, and some grad student brought in their laptop, and it took them a half hour to plug in the external hard drive, speakers, and this and that to make the thing work. And I'm like, this isn't worth the trouble. I'll stick with a desktop. Now, of course, they're a lot more convenient. Yeah, a friend of mine, one of my neighbors, who unfortunately is quite ill now. But anyway, he had an Atari. He first started playing with computers on my Trash 80, then got, I think, an Atari and an Amiga and all those. And eventually became professional programmer when he finished college. And another buddy of mine was one of the few people in the country to build computer that was in Popular Electronics years ago, which I think only a couple of people in the country ever built. And he went on to invent a whole bunch of stuff. And you probably heard the story, and they had been in a monologue for too long. You probably heard the story of the 91-year-old guy who sold his stock in Apple for a couple of $100 in 1976 and would have been a billionaire now if he kept it. So I guess
AC2GS. Yeah, I heard that story, and you're alluding to the Altair, which I had that issue. It was two issues, one after the other, a Popular Electronics, and I would have given anything for that worthless computer. I mean, it practically did nothing. You had to boot up its BIOS. Its initial bootstrap is entered with the paddle switches on the front. And then it loads the rest of the BIOS, and of course Microsoft made its bones with the basic compiler or interpreter. I think it was an interpreter. I remember all those days. I was there. I was watching. I didn't make billions and trillions of dollars, but I wrote some software just for the heck of it. RSL Clock. It was in the Fred Fish collection. Fred Fish was, by the way, an amateur radio operator who also had an Amiga, and he decided he was going to set up a distribution for open source software. So he would hand out these initially floppies, I think eventually CD-ROMs, and I was part of his Fred Fish collection.
Yeah, you got a lot further than I did. Yeah, but so that was interesting stuff. I just did not really have the programming chops to pursue it, unfortunately. But you know, some people did some really interesting stuff in those days and got our whole industry started. One other last comment. Maybe one of the aviation people on here might have a comment. There's just a story on the news a little while ago, the United Airlines jet landing at Newark Airport reportedly somehow clipped the tractor trailer and a light pole on the New Jersey Turnpike on its way into Newark Airport, and apparently everyone lived to tell the tale, which is kind of incredible. I think we'll be hearing a lot more about that. And with that, I'll let you get back to Matt, and I'm probably going to be off for a while and come back for the space report. WB2BX up.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thank you once again for participating. I do appreciate it. This is AC2GS with the Weimark Technical Net. Wesley, what do you got for us tonight?
How am I coming out?
Okay, I can understand you.
Okay. I have sent you this summary of the subject I'm going to discuss today, but it was after TechNet started, so it's the last one. It's a good problem today. So starting from the electric antennas, can an antenna be made from the electric material? You mentioned that was a long time ago that this was discussed, probably during the TechNet when Dick was still alive. If you want to talk about it, back to you.
No, I think it was after Dick passed away. John from Los Alamos, KC2SHO, who's listening to us on All Star Link, told me that Los Alamos was working on a dielectric antenna called the Light Slinger.
Yeah, so a few words, how it works, because these antennas are manufactured right now in thousands. So we have a dielectric resonator antenna that utilizes low-loss, high-permittivity dielectric materials that would be, ceramic, plastic, and are the radiating element. So instead of those antennas are particularly useful for high frequency applications, and for that antenna to not look somewhat from the cosmos, we might say that our eyes are able to receive electromagnetic waves, which is the visible light as well. And anyhow, coming back to the antenna, how the electric antenna works. So instead of conducting currents, metal, let's say, antennas, right? Those antennas utilize displacement currents within the material. That the electric block is energized by feed line, allowing it to act as a resonator and radiate electromagnetic waves into the space. So if you want to say a few words, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Not particularly. You summed it up reasonably well. I mean, dielectrics can be used as radiating antennas, but they are principally we tend to use dielectrics as a means to use transmission lines, waveguides and in the case of optical cables, those are made out of glass, so they operate more like waveguides, and then they're transmission lines as opposed to radiators. But you can configure them as radiators, and in the case of dielectric antennas, they have a lot of different forms that are capable of operating. They do tend to be mostly used in higher frequencies because of size and mechanical aspects, but I haven't heard that the light slinger had kind of made it to the big time yet. I hope that one of these days I hear more about it, but so far, nothing much, at least in the literature I read.
Well, those antennas, they have a special application so far, but that's what is noticed, that they have a high radiation efficiency. So unlike metal, the electrics have negligible conduction losses. They are small in size, so there is miniaturization of flexibility. They can be produced in various shapes, cylindrical, rectangular, hemispherical, and whatever. And they are 3D printable. So that's something good about it. And the common dielectric materials used are ceramics, so that would be bismuth, polymers, and plastic. Teflon. Well, Teflon we are familiar with because it's in every coaxial cable. Natural fibers, but they also use different ones, polyamide and many others. Natural fibers, that would be reinforced polymer composites, hemp and cotton, so everything natural. If we're talking about 5G, 6G, we're talking about dielectric resonator antennas. Yes, they are being in production right now. There are some radar applications and satellite systems applications, and that would be dielectric lens antennas. Talking about the lenses, I'm going to be talking probably the next subject, right? Let me see what I have in here. No, I have the thing. Okay. So if you have any comment on it, I go to the next one.
No comments.
Okay. So the next one, the thing. The thing. So, the thing, also known as a great seal bug, was covert listening device designed by Soviet inventor Leon Termin. So Leon Termin is not the Russian name at all, but that information will come later. And it was concealed with in a wooden replica of Great Seal of the United States. The seal was presented to the United States Ambassador Avril Herman, by Russian children, scouts, in 1945, and that was a gesture of friendship, but it was a Trojan horse, so never trust Russian. Trojan horse that served as a sophisticated surveillance tool for the Soviet Union spying on Americans for 7 years. Long-term, was born from French-German dissidents who escaped to Russia. He also worked as an early television research guy, so that was one of the first guys, if not the first guy, who invented television. conservative device evolved into, I'm talking about the spying device, into today's RFID and credit cards that can spy on you even every day. Even today, every day. So Russian spying bug was acting as a radio transmitter, didn't have any wires, any battery, any logic elements, any electronics at all. Okay. So the American ambassador hung it in his office after the children gave him that carving, and he put it in his office right above his head. 7 years later, an American serviceman accidentally tuned it to 900 megahertz, and he heard an ambassador, and that was a great surprise. But they kept it in silence. Nobody knows about it. And how did we find about it? In 1960, May 26, the great seal bug was presented by U.S. Ambassador Henry Cobalt, Jr., at the United States Nations Security Council. They had at that time a situation where U-2, American U-2, was shot on the Russian territory, and the pilot survived and was in captivity, Russian captivity. And they were trying to illustrate that both of the nations engaged in espionage activities. And here I have some information especially important to Paul. Let me drop. Okay, so we would say, Paul is in space report. How is that related? Well, long-term inventor of spying device, he went to United States and foolishly returned to Russia. And he was imprisoned there and tortured in the Russian concentration camp called Gulag, with another big-name Ukrainian man, Sergei Korolev. And that guy made a racket allowing Gagarin to fly to space, and because of him, America sent astronauts to the moon. And all of them, those two guys were in prison. But anyhow, Korolev also built rockets. They are right now carrying on nuclear weapons. So prisoner. A few words about the inventor of this of the bug.
Wesley.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
John from Los Alamos tried to transmit a couple of minutes ago, so maybe if you pause for a little while, if John wants to say something, maybe he wanted to talk about the light slinger, I don't know, but I just see that he lit up on my computer. So let's pause for a minute or two. John, if you want to say something, feel free. I guess not. Wesley, though, you know, try to practice breaking a little bit every so often. You know, if you keep going, or you know, if something is important, I won't be able to notify you. So try a little bit more to kind of break up the presentation a bit.
Well, thank you very much for telling me that, for reminding me that. So, the inventor of spying device, the French-German guy, was tortured in Burka prison in Russia and sent to Kolyma, that was a gold mine. And after that, he was put to work in Sharaska. Sharaska was the lab in Gulag, in a Russian concentration camp. And he was there with another guy. So we're talking about Sergei Korolev. And then we're talking about Gagarin, and then United States of America sending first man to moon. But But then there was another guy, Andrei Tupolev. Andrei Tupolev was the guy who made Russian aviation for Russia. And so the difference is that in the United States, inventors are cherished and respected, but Soviets preferred to torture them and force to build Russian space program, Russian rockets, and so on. And now Dr. Roy will be able to explain how the transmitter with no battery, no wires, no elements, that was spying on Americans, works. Dr. Roy, please.
Well, I'm not going to go into any nitty-gritty detail. I mean, basically, it's like an RFID that's unpowered passively. So the detector transmits a carrier frequency that's picked up on tuned circuits. In this case, it has a resonant cavity that the resonance shifts with the amount of with any kind of audio signal in the air that changes the dimensions of the cavity and shifts the resonant frequency and shifts the amplitude of the reflected carrier wave into an amplitude modulated signal that's the exact same frequency that the receiver transmits to the bug. So it's a passive device that's energized by the receiving contraption that includes a carrier transmitter that supplies local power and that reflects shifted amplitudes that are modulated to give it its signal.
Thank you very much for that, and I have a few words that I can add to it. So the thing was made from capacitor membrane connected to the small quarter-wave antenna. There was a piece of wire. Every ham radio operator can do it. In his house, on his kitchen table. It had no power or active electronic components. The device was a passive cavity resonator and became active only when the radio signal of the correct frequency was sent to the device from external transmitter. This is referred to National Security Agency, NSA, as illumination, illuminating of the passive device. And RFID works exactly the same. So if you, when in your car you're crossing the gates, your license plate is being read not only by the cameras but also by the device that you have in your car that sends all the information about you that is stored there. So in other words, that was very difficult for Americans to find out what the heck is that. So they took that seal from the wall. They damaged the wall. They were trying to find out listening device inside. They found nothing. And eventually, finally, they took a close look to the seal. They were able to look inside, and they found something that nobody knows what it is because it was ahead of its time. And they called it the thing. So if you go to YouTube, you can find plenty of videos. I have a contact with two guys. One is British and the other one is Polish, who actually made a copy of that device. And the Polish guy not only made a copy of the device, but he presented that device on the symposium. So it is something that you could imagine that you have a small can for the paint, but no paint in it. And instead of the cover, you put the membrane into it. And on the side of it, you put an antenna. That's it. That's all. That's all. There is a small, nitty-gritty something inside, but not much. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Okay, yeah, it's a bug. It's based on the same principle as our little RFID chips that are all over the place, that are embedded in our credit cards and all manner of things.
Okay. Rotating mechanical motor made by nature, to the very aspect of mobility of the bacteria. Dr. Roy, I'm not a professional in this matter. I could say a few words that there is a special bacteria. I mean, not special bacteria. It's in our stomach. Flagellated bacteria. So, rotary motors were invented by human beings. Conscious creatures. But before that, it was invented long time ago, billions of years ago, by the nature. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Well, I wouldn't say billions of years ago, probably less than a billion years. Flagella is ubiquitous. It's all over the place. It's a means that a lot of different organisms travel. It whips around and, you know, like a little, like a fin in the back of a boat, and it goes thither and hither. We all have flagellated cells in our body. Well, 50% of us do, or I would say something like 99% of people listening. It's sperm cells, and there are other cells in our body that are flagellated. It's a seemingly very sophisticated mechanism of molecular, biomolecular form. A lot of creationists attempt to use this as an excuse that God is the only one who could make rotating flagella. But the biologists have indicated pathways where genetic material can be repurposed and proteins and such can be modified ever so slightly by mutations and produce workable flagella. So it's a fascinating structure. As I said, it's ubiquitous, and it does not inherently disprove evolution. It just proves that complex structures can come about over time. So the flagella is a complex structure, but it is certainly possible. There are relatively reasonable pathways that led to its development, and once it was developed, it became somewhat, as I said, ubiquitous across many lines in the kingdoms of life.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I thought of you. But truly, this is one of the excuses that creationists make for that complex things. They also do that on the eye, although you can show how structures began as simple hyperpigmented photosensitive cells slowly evolved over the eons into very complex optical devices. These things do happen. You can slowly develop more complex objects starting from simple fundamental things.
Perhaps. Well, that was great. I saw you did it. That was very nice.
See, I always think of all my participants.
Talking about understanding of mechanics. It's not the first time a human being was able to copy nature and make an invention. So we're talking about gears and rotating mechanisms. Now we have something that was made by nature. Now the next one would be mirrors. The concept of individuality. Reflection, radio waves, sun energy collection, more. It's a big subject. We're not going to go into it very deep, but there was a say that it Cleopatra never saw herself in a mirror. I'm not sure if that's true. Many people didn't see themselves. They saw see other people. They saw themselves in the water. But there was no mirror. And then concept of individuality. Well, later on, I would like to introduce the radio communication application of the mirror, Faraday box, parabolic mirror application of the fiber optic internal reflection, and Yagi antenna reflector. But, so we're talking about the mirror as an universal word, but talking about the concept of individuality. See, I scrutinize their own reflection leading to greater awareness of personal identity and uniqueness. Before mirror's identity was more closely tied to community and social roles. Maybe Dr. Roy would like to say a few words. Back to you.
I have a question.
Yes, Jim.
The topic at hand seems to bring me to a Russian word. Word is kulak. And I was wondering what Wesley could relate to that topic, the Russian term kulak.
Yeah, gulak, not kulak, gulak. Kulak is also the word, but it's a fist. But Gulag, it was the name of the concentration camp. So Hitler made concentration camps, and there was a place when they were murdering Jews. And Russian made the Gulag where they were murdering anybody they thought they could murder, including their own. By the way, the Russian invented the best, the most beautiful system of education. That was the only good thing they did with their communism. So they were taking children and educating children, everything. There was music there. There was drawing. There was any kind of art. And after that school, students didn't have any profession. But he knew everything just a little. So that was easy enough for Stalin to murder whoever and then replace him. So he didn't make it to make human being more advanced. He did it for himself. He murdered, some people say, about 20 million people, 10 million people of their own. And he was needed to replace those people, so that was easy to do it. And then that education system survived to countries occupied by Russia, and that was Poland and plenty of others. And eventually it died because the way that, let's say, United States educate children is give them the chance to learn the job and not much more. That's why if electrician has a problem with the pipe, he calls plumber, and the plumber has a problem with something else, calls mechanic, car mechanic or whoever. In that communist time, young people had to learn everything just a little bit more deep. So, but 10 Americans, let me drop for a moment. Okay, 10 Americans within a fraction of time could do that when one Russian could do within 3 months. So Yes, he would be able to do it. And now Russian went to the dogs, so we're not going to think about today's time. That was the time of communism and all of the tragic times. Back to you, Andrea.
Wesley?
Comment?
Yeah, 1 minute, Jim. I just, according to what I looked up, basically gulag is not a Nazi term. Gulag is a Russian term. It was an established group of labor camps and prisons, and it stands for the Russian initials of Main Camp Administration. The gulag has taken on a much more general definition over the years, but it started as a very, very early Soviet Union exercise in locking all your citizens up.
As talked about earlier, not the question I asked. Kulak, K, kilo, K-U-L-A-C-K. Very important Russian word from about 100 years ago, kulak, that nobody knows today, but apparently even Wesley, who has some heritage from that part of the world, I understand.
Okay, kulak is the fist. Kulak is the fist, so if you prepare your fist to beat somebody, that's the kulak. That's the real meaning of the word that exists in Russian language, kulak. Back to you.
Wesley?
Yes.
You're right. It literally does mean fist in Russian, but it alludes to a class of prosperous peasant farmers in the Russian Empire and in the early Soviet Union.
Yes, you're right. We're talking about historical time, but since 90% of everything that is historically sound is convoluted in Russia or convoluted by Russia, we need to specify whether we're talking in universal terms or we're talking about the actual physical modern word and understanding of that word. Back to you.
Yeah, well, Jim mentioned 100 years ago, and so if you dial your Wayback Machine, that's approximately when the Soviet Union got rid of all the kulaks because no one was allowed to be wealthy.
That is correct. That is correct. So, but that was more complicated. We're talking about 1917. In 1917, everything changed. Russians, moderate wife and the children of the Tsar, and moderate servant of the Tsar, and the pets of the Tsar and pets of the servants of the Tsar. That's how the Russian were. And from that point, we have a new chapter in the Russian history. Back to you.
Okay, but seemingly the source material suggests that they were the peasant class, but the wealthier peasant class, the few who figured how to game the system, I gather, and were gamed by the Soviet machinery. I assume that's what Jim is alluding to. Am I right, Jim?
Yeah, you're right on target, and it doesn't take a lot of deep digging to find that out about it. And these peasants that recently, just tonight, I happened to run upon a criteria that I had not heard about before, that there were peasants that had about 8 acres of land, which I'm pretty sure doesn't really meet most people's criteria when they hear the word peasant. There were people that could, they were existing on a planet. They had a house, they had a home, they had an ox, a goat, whatever. You know, 8 acres. They employed people.